I want you to imagine that you are reading a novel, a lengthy novel, a novel that is going to cover a few centuries following the line of a particular dynasty. Obviously, there are certain leaders in that dynasty who are going to stand out more than others, and perhaps more pages will be spent on this leader as opposed to that one, on down through the history as you learn of the character of this dynasty. But of course, along the way, there are going to be other cameo appearances, just a little bit here and there, and you don't see very much about these other characters, but they're necessary for telling the story, and so you get to the end, and somebody might ask you, well, do you remember so-and-so? And, oh yeah, I forgot about that one. And you have to go back and think, well, who are those people? Who was that? What did that person do? The Bible, in a sense, is like that. There is a cameo appearance that we find in the Old Testament that it's just there, just so briefly, that you could blink and miss it. I'm thinking particularly of this man known as Melchizedek. How many verses do you suppose there are in the Old Testament that speak about Melchizedek? It's really about 4. And yet he holds a very important place as far as the writer of Hebrews is concerned. He shows to us something about the main person in this dynasty. This one who is known as the Son of David, Jesus Christ. Melchizedek shows us something about him so that the writer of Hebrews, as he writes to the people who are suffering in that period of time following the resurrection and ascension of Christ, they've probably not thought much about Melchizedek. They know the name because it's in one of the Psalms, Psalm 110. But the only other reference to him is in Genesis chapter 14. And so it would be very easy to just pass over him. He just seems to be a bit player in the whole scenario that we find in the Old Testament. But it has been said that concerning a play, that if there is a table and a gun is resting on that table in the first act, it had better be used before the end of the play. And that's the way we can look at Melchizedek. He was given to us back there in Genesis 14. And in Psalm 110, we sing of him, or at least of someone who is of the same priestly order as he. Why do we need to understand something of Melchizedek? He's like that gun resting on the table. And the writer of Hebrews is bringing us back to come to know who this Melchizedek is and what effect he has on our understanding of who Jesus is. Let's read then the first 10 verses of Hebrews chapter 7. Hebrews chapter 7. Actually, in this whole chapter, there's quite a bit about Melchizedek, much more than we have in the Old Testament, and we'll probably run into his name later on as well. But here, the first 10 verses of Hebrews chapter 7 have to do with the position that Melchizedek has for our understanding of who Jesus is. This Melchizedek was king of Salem and priest of God Most High. He met Abraham returning from the defeat of the kings and blessed him. And Abraham gave him a tenth of everything. First, his name means king of righteousness. Then also king of Salem means king of peace. Without father or mother, without genealogy, without beginning of days or end of life, like the Son of God, he remains a priest forever. Just think how great he was. Even the patriarch Abraham gave him a tenth of the plunder. Now, the law requires the descendants of Levi who become priests to collect a tenth from the people. That is, their brothers, even though their brothers are descended from Abraham. This man, however, did not trace his descent from Levi, yet he collected a tenth from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. And without doubt, the lesser person is blessed by the greater. In the one case, the tenth is collected by men who die, but in the other case, by him who is declared to be living. One might even say that Levi, who collects the tenth, paid the tenth through Abraham, because when Melchizedek met Abraham, Levi was still in the body of his ancestor. We'll end our reading at that point. This is God's word. May he be glorified in it. Melchizedek. A strange name, isn't it? Haven't heard of anybody else named Melchizedek. Maybe some of you have, but I have not. And I don't think we find anybody else in the scriptures by that name. After all, it's more than just a name. Rather, it's a title as well. Who is he? Well, first of all, he is one who appeared as a type of Christ. I want to read it in the New American Standard because I think this brings out a little different view than what we had here. Here in the NIV it says, like the Son of God, he remains a priest forever. Here, however, it says, without father, without mother, without genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like the Son of God, he remains a priest perpetually. Made like the Son of God is a phrase that really needs to stand on its own. To understand that he was made like the Son of God. Now, there are some people who would say that that Melchizedek is actually an appearance in the Old Testament of Jesus himself. We have some of those. But it seems to me that this statement right here tells us that no, this is not Jesus. This is not the Son of God. But he was made to be like the Son of God. There is some way in which he represented the Son of God. Some way in which he represented the Messiah. And that's what we need to see of him. When Abraham was living in the land that God had promised, but didn't own any of it yet, his nephew Lot had gone down to live in Sodom. And there were some kings that came and they fought against Sodom and Gomorrah and the other towns there and took everybody captive, including Lot and his family. And so Abraham gathered up 318 men from his own servants, as well as some others who were with him nearby, and they went and fought up against those kings, and they captured those kings, they defeated them, and they were able to get Lot and bring him back. And on their way back, they stopped at this place called, that we now call Jerusalem, nicknamed Salem. And there he met Melchizedek. And he gave him a tenth of the spoils, a tithe of the spoils, if you will. And we are told here that he was the king of Salem, and he was a priest of God Most High. Now, in the Old Testament, under the Mosaic Law, you don't find anybody holding those two offices together. Now, there are some who come close, some who were leaders, perhaps, in Israel, who were also priests, like Moses. But no one who's actually the king and also the priest. In fact, we do have one king who tried to offer a sacrifice himself. But when he went into the temple to do so, he broke out with leprosy and hurried out. Now, those were two separate offices in Israel. But here, these two offices are together in Melchizedek. And that's one of the ways he is made like the Son of God. He is both priest and king. And so the writer of Hebrews tells us some things about Melchizedek. And he tells us that there are some things we don't know about Melchizedek. And some of those things that we don't know are important. Now, the way he has written it here makes us wonder who this guy is, without mother, without father, without genealogy. What does he mean by that? Well, he is a man for whom we have no record. If you go back to the book of Genesis, you find a lot of genealogies, don't you? I think it's the fourth chapter where you have the genealogy of Cain. His son, his grandson, and great-grandson, and so forth. In the fifth chapter, you have the genealogy of Seth. And Seth lived so many years and had a son and named him such and such and lived some more years and then he died. And every verse just goes in that same pattern. Until you come to, of course, Enoch, who was not, because he walked with God. He was not, so he didn't die. But then you come on down to one who names his son Noah, because perhaps this one will give us rest, the rest that we've been looking for. But it's a genealogy. And you can look back and say, okay, there's who Noah's father was. There's his grandfather, all the way back to Adam. And then after the flood, you have genealogies again. And we come down to a man named Abraham. And he has a son named Ishmael. And as we go on, we get the genealogy of Ishmael. We forget about him. And we come to Isaac, and here's his genealogy. Isaac has twins. And we come a little farther and we get, okay, here's Esau's family. Now we kind of set him off to the side. And here's Jacob. And that's the way you find it in the book of Genesis. For all of these different people except for Melchizedek. Without father, without mother, without genealogy. He just appears on the scene. He is a priest of God Most High. He is glorious. He's even greater than Abraham, the way he is set forth there in the 14th chapter of Genesis. We're going to come back to that. But you see, that becomes a very important aspect of this. So he is without genealogy. He merely appears, and then it seems that he is forgotten, but he's been given to us so that we might know who this Jesus would be. And then we're told about his name, King of Righteousness, Melchizedek. The Hebrew word for king would be Melech, and for righteousness would be Tzedek. Melchizedek, King of Righteousness. King of Salem also is who he is known as. Salem being kind of a nickname for Jerusalem, as it would later be called. But here it's just Salem. Many of you know the word, the Hebrew word for peace, Shalom. King of Peace, that's who he is known as. King of Righteousness, King of Peace. What would we learn of Christ? Well, he himself is our righteousness. And Isaiah would say he's the Prince of Peace. This Melchizedek was made like the Son of God in order that he might show the Son of God to us. And so he anticipates the priesthood of Jesus Christ. He combines both the office of priest and king in himself, something that the Old Testament, the kings who were descended from David, never did. and the descendants of Aaron as priests were never the kings. But he would bring together these two offices. He would be both the priest and the king. He would be the one to rule over us. He would be the one who also would offer the sacrifice for us and bring us to our heavenly Father. And so Melchizedek is one who typifies and demonstrates who the Messiah would be. Now you see, the point is that if you were a really astute person in the Old Testament and you read about this fellow Melchizedek, you might begin to understand, okay, this is what the Messiah is to be like. And then when you get the 110th Psalm, it would become even more clear. You are a priest, says the psalmist, speaking of the Messiah, according to the order of Melchizedek. I don't know if the Israelites would be scratching their heads about that, because the only other order they knew, of course, was the order of Aaron. You understand what we mean by an order? You have in the Roman Catholic Church, you have the various orders of monks, you know, the Jesuits and the Franciscans and so forth. Okay, here are the priests. There's one priest that is hood that is the order of Aaron, and another that's the order of Melchizedek. How many do we know from Melchizedek? Well, only Melchizedek and Jesus. The original hearers or readers of this message, though, would know about Aaron, and they would know particularly about him, and not so much about Melchizedek. In fact, they've probably thought of him as that two-bit cameo appearance who really doesn't make any difference. But Melchizedek's priesthood is greater than Aaron's, and that's what we need to understand. Consider Abraham. We need to understand the position of Abraham in the lives of these people in order to understand the greatness of Melchizedek. You go back to Matthew's record of Christ, and it begins with a genealogy. It doesn't begin with Adam. It begins with Abraham, because that's who the Jews would think of as their father. They would think of Abraham, and there was no one greater than Abraham. You want to talk about someone who was most revered among them? Yes, David was great, Moses was great, but Abraham. He was the one who was given the promises. And so the genealogy of Matthew begins there, as he tells about Christ. The Jews often appealed to Abraham as their father. In fact, there's one time when Jesus is being opposed by the Jews, and he talks about how he knew Abraham, and they said, well, we know Abraham, he's our father. And he talks about, no, he's not your father. Yes, he is. They revered him. So, and if you wanted to really diss the Jews, you would say that they weren't connected to Abraham. There's a time that Jesus was healing a lady. I believe she had a withered hand or something, but she healed him on the Sabbath, and that really upset people. And when he talks to the people about why he healed them on that day, he says, should not this woman who is a daughter of Abraham be set free on the Sabbath? He appeals to Abraham because he knows how revered Abraham was among the Jews. Okay, remember that. And remember how Abraham interacted with Melchizedek, and who's greater. Abraham was blessed by Melchizedek. It wasn't the other way around. If Abraham is the greater, he should be blessing Melchizedek. And remember, this is not just a toast of good wish for for someone. This is an actual blessing that God had his priests give. And so here, he blesses Abraham, who is, of course, the great-grandfather of Levi, from whom come the priests of Israel through the line of Aaron. It was Melchizedek that blessed Abraham, not Abraham that blessed Melchizedek. You might think, well, Abraham's the one that had the promises. Shouldn't he be the one to bless Melchizedek? No, it's the other way around. Because Melchizedek is a different sort of priest, a priest of God Most High. This is a true believer in the one living and true God. A second thing that is said about Melchizedek is he lives forever. Now that doesn't mean that this person whom Abraham met never died. But he's pointing back to this fact that here he is without father, without mother, without genealogy. We don't know a thing about him. But he lives in our memory forever. And that's the way we are to understand him, because that's who Jesus would be as a priest in the order of Melchizedek. These other priests that we have under Moses, they offer their sacrifices and they die. And somebody else has to take their place. But Melchizedek lives forever. That's what the writer of Hebrews tells us. And so there's a second way in which he is greater than the Levitical priests and Abraham. But there's a third way. Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek. In other words, he brought tribute to Melchizedek. He acknowledged him to be the greater one. And so he brings these tithes to Melchizedek in order to honor Melchizedek. And that again shows us his greatness. And the writer of Hebrews extends that to Levi, the father of the priests, and to say that, look, here's a priesthood that is much greater than the one that Aaron had. So Melchizedek's priesthood is greater than Aaron's. He's the one who blesses. He's the one who receives tithes. He's the one who lives forever. There's an obvious point to this, isn't there? As the writer of Hebrews is dealing with these people who have been steeped in Judaism and who are having a difficult time turning away from the Old Testament ceremonies, even though they know about Christ, they're having trouble acknowledging him to be that priest king that he is, to be the one who is greater than Aaron. To be the one who is greater than Abraham. To be the one who is greater than David and Moses. So that we are to set those aside, they become obsolete, and the new order of things takes over. And we are to worship him. We are to be humbled before him. We are to be humbled before the order of Melchizedek. Those who were steeped in the Mosaic law would have trouble seeing this. And that's why the writer of Hebrews goes to such lengths to point out just how great Melchizedek is in comparison to Abraham. They honored Moses and Aaron. They honored Abraham. They honored David. But they needed to see that a change of law had taken place. No longer do we go after those old ceremonies where we offer the sacrifices of animals, but we come to the one who has offered himself, because he's of the order of Melchizedek and he is a priest who remains forever, and his sacrifice is one that is effective forever. Consider the greatness of this high priest that we have. He lives forever. You will always have this priest. You will always be able to come to this priest. You will always be able to confess your sins to him and to receive his forgiveness, because he remains forever. You will always be able to come to him and through him to the Father, because he is always there to intercede for you who love him. He's the one who blesses you. There is a blessing that they were to give in the Old Testament. And at the beginning of Luke's gospel account, you have Zacharias coming out after having given the sacrifice, and he's unable to speak because he's seen the angel there who has told him about this son that he's going to have, named John, who's going to be the forerunner of the Messiah. Unable to speak, he is unable to give a blessing. And we come through the Gospel of Luke, and we come to the very end of the Gospel of Luke, and there we find Jesus blessing his people and ascending to heaven. The blessing is there. He will always be able to bless. It's much more than a nice toast. This is a declaration of God's promises and of his faithfulness to his promises. The Lord bless you and keep you. We're also able to bring tribute to him who is the priest king, and so to honor him. Not like they did to the Levites, but we bring our tithes and offerings to the one who is the priest king. We acknowledge him to be our king, to be the one who promises, I will be your God and you will be my people. I will never leave you nor forsake you. I will bless you and you will be blessed. You have no other way to the Father except by this priest. But oh, what a glorious priest he is. What an effective priest he is for us. Submit to him in order that you might be delivered from your sin and serve him as your king, because he is both priest and king who has revealed himself to us in his word. He's also the prophet. Melchizedek's appearance in the Old Testament is basically just a cameo appearance. A few verses in Genesis 14 and a verse in Psalm 110. But it's not really about him, is it? It's about the one that he was made like. The Son of God. The one who is our priest, our king, forever. Even in Abraham's day, you see Christ being anticipated. And he wants us to go back there to Melchizedek and see that God was preparing them for the Christ who would come. And he is forever our conquering priest king who has offered himself as a sacrifice, who has ascended into heaven, who intercedes for us and who rules over us, and he even rules over our enemies in order that we may be blessed. He lives forever. Let us rejoice in him.